Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. Today, we're going to talk about tea and grapes and how it can help you lose weight, have a healthier heart, and how drinking 100% fruit juice is associated with a lower risk of metabolic syndrome. There's your diabetes. Also, 4 in 10 American women of all ages are now obese, but over 60% overweight. Put it another way, we have more overweight American women by population than either China or India, and that says something, since there are 1.3 billion, 1.35 billion, and we have 325 million. Always from good quality peer-reviewed journals, always from leading scientific institutions. And the reason I do that is because for a long time I watched how many of the orthodox mainstream medical establishment would condemn anything stated by that which was considered alternative, always not scientific. To the contrary, everything we do is, so you can have confidence in it. My guest today, following Health and Nutrition, will be Chris Hedges. I'd like Chris to talk about the idea that Bernie Sanders was really leading an independent movement, a major movement, a revolutionary movement, because some of us believe that in the end he would simply capitulate, be a good corporate Democrat, and turn all those individuals, younger, more idealistic individuals, many of the millennials, over to Hillary Clinton. Also today, I'm going to play a clip from Bill Maher, as well as a leading person that believes that Islam is a religion that sponsors terrorism, and you'll hear both of them making their statements. Then I'm going to ask Chris to respond. Chris is one of our nation's most insightful cultural critics, social and political activist, investigative journalist. And so we look forward to that. Then 9 diseases linked to pesticides. And while many people don't think about pesticides, they buy it, they spray it on, the weeds in their lawn. You're tracking that in your house. If you have pets, they're bringing it in. It then isn't on the floor, it's on in the air. What can it do to you? Don't trust that the EPA has got your best interests going to ban them. They won't. Virtually every major public health issue has first been the sound of concern has been from the activists within our communities, not from government agencies. Also today, where friendships are better than morphine. This was an interesting study done at Oxford University. That's interesting. We'll talk about it. I'm going to do a commentary on climate disruption. Today, we will have one of the hottest days on record in Palm Springs, which is about 2 hours south of Los Angeles. Could have the hottest day on record in Los Angeles, but it's not an isolated episode. It's in over 16 states. They could have record-breaking days today. That is just the beginning of the new norm. But also, just last week, we had torrential rain in Houston. The water was 20 feet above normal, and also they had 14 inches in 8 hours. Well, there's nowhere for the water to run. Why is this happening? I want to pull back and give you a world view of what's happening with climate change and why we should pay attention, because there are consequences. The trouble is, if you're living in an isolated environment from that, let's just say yesterday, a beautiful day, lots of people out in Central Park. I was running with our Running and Walking Club, which we meet every Sunday at 9 o'clock, and we had a large group, and we had a great time. It was beautiful. Afterwards, you go over and have a nice glass of juice, and then you spend your day socializing, whatever you choose to do. You would never know there's a problem in the world if you lived on the Upper West Side, or in a lot of the boroughs, and or in a lot of the suburbs. But what about the rest of the world? What about where they were having horrific drought and then flooding in different countries? What if you're a farmer and you're saying that your seeds have been washed away? What if the monsoons didn't come and now your seeds are parched? How many people are affected? Well, I'll tell you how many people are affected not by environmental concerns, but by civil wars and having to move. According to the latest figure, 65 million. 65 million. And the number affected by the climate, much higher. Let's begin. A lot of people are depressed. A lot of people are anxious. A lot of people are lonely. In fact, I remember once when I was on QVC, I was talking about a book I'd written, and they asked me, would I stay overnight and do an overnight? I said, sure, because I'm wondering who's going to want a book at 3 o'clock in the morning? And yet, there I was, in the middle of the morning, on television, and the phones were blazing. I think I was averaging 13,000 to 18,000 books sold per segment, and these are relatively short segments. And afterwards, I went over to this gentleman who was answering the phones. It was a large group of phone answers, and I said, who are these people? Who's up watching television at 3 o'clock in the morning? And not a regular show, you know, one that offers, you know, everything from jewelry to barbecue grills to books. And he said, well, he said, a lot of these are just very lonely people. And they'll call and they want to talk. And he said, but we have limits of how long we can spend on the phone. But they'll actually ask for people that they know. And then they'll buy something, but then they return it within 30 days, so they get a full refund. I said, how common is that? He said, from my experience, about 25%. Didn't know that. Shows you that there's a lot of people out there who don't have a strong and healthy social network. In fact, in our new health support group, the largest group of people are for depression and anxiety. Next, it's brain. You know, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, dementia, memory loss. And then it's high blood pressure, then overweight. And you want to know why these people are depressed, because it's not a brain chemical imbalance. There is no such thing in the scientific literature as brain chemical imbalance. In fact, yesterday while I was walking back from the park, as I was walking up Amsterdam, a gentleman says, hi, Gary, and I turn around, there were three people having lunch, and he said, just want to let you know that Friday shows, those four shows with the discussion of the power behind the scenes with Danny Sheehan, he said, best I've ever heard. And so I went over and we had a conversation on it. And I said, I'm going to continue doing one more because it's the most popular series I've ever done. People really responded to it. And he said, I'm a psychiatrist. I practice in the hospital. And I listened to you. He said, a lot of what you say about over-medicating in psychiatry is absolutely right. And I said, well, I'll be doing a whole documentary that'll be coming out in the next 6 months on manufacturing madness. It's actually called Return to the Snake Pits. For older people in the audience, you'll remember mental institutions used to be called snake pits. In fact, there was a movie with Livy de Havilland on that. And I want to show how virtually nothing has changed from the 1800s. And I actually go back and show you text of how the leading psychiatrists were treating people. And it was inhumane in the extreme. But they're still treating people in the extreme, and it's causing death, especially with our vets. In any case, I said to him, if you want to drop by my health support group, I put this out to all the people in the audience now. If you are a licensed healthcare practitioner, if you're a nurse, physician, and you want to see how a holistic, non-medical protocol of lifestyle and diet can literally change disease into wellness, reverse conditions that no one's ever reversed in medicine, give my office a call. And I'll give you an invitation to come and sit in and actually see with your own eyes. And there have been many physicians who've come to the Tri-State Healing Center I used to have, and they would just be amazed. Now, did they take them back to their office, change their own practice, change their mind? I don't know, because they didn't follow up. But I think it's time that we started to deconstruct the existing medical paradigm. For 88% of all medicine, it does not work. It actually is a major contributing factor to unnecessary deaths. How many deaths? 3 jumbo jets filled with Americans who did not need to die every 48 hours because of American medicine. That's 3 jumbo jets every 48 hours. How many is that over the last 20 years? 8 million. Do you think that 8 million unnecessarily dead Americans would get someone to pay attention to a paradigm? Absolutely, positively not. What about all the books written, all the articles written, including by Dr. Angell, who is a former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, who's now a professor at Harvard, her book, and others? Absolutely nothing. Will anything change American medicine? Zip. Zero. Will people continue to die in astronomical amounts, hundreds of thousands? Absolutely bet your life on it. Will anyone care except for the patient's friends and family? Nobody. Will medicine change? It can't. It's not possible. But then again, nothing changes in America. It can't. It's not possible. No institution will ever change. Banking won't change. The military-industrial complex won't change. The energy cartels won't change. They may occasionally, let's say, switch over from nuclear, but nothing changes. The political system of corruption, complete and absolute, will not change. Politicians, mainly being sociopaths, won't change. Our reluctance to look deeper into any issue will not change. But the good news is individuals do change. Individuals can create a greater opportunity for themselves to be healthier, wiser than what they've been in the past. And that I see happening in tremendous numbers. I'm very optimistic for people. And remember, you have to have a breakdown in the system to create a new system. No system will ever reform itself to the level where it actually benefits society. That's the game they play. We will reform it. Nothing ever works. Just completely allow the systems to disengage from your reality. Meaning when you stop using their credit cards and you stop buying their food that's genetically engineered and you stop voting for their politicians, the lesser of two evils, when you stop using their banks, when you stop buying their clothes made in China, then that takes away their power, causes an acceleration of their collapse, especially since virtually everything they're doing is based upon debt. At a certain point, they cannot support the debt that they've created. And this debt service then causes their bankruptcy. And that's what we want, but not bailing them out. In any case, a lot of people are depressed. And by the way, our office number for any healthcare professional wants to see how this is done. And we will be changing people's lives, helping them change their lives from sick to well, from diabetic to non-diabetic, improving their memories. Done it too many times not to know it doesn't work. But this is a big group. I'm going to publish the results in peer-reviewed literature. Just call 646-926-5422. Now, to this issue of friendships. I'm a big believer in friendships. And this is what is said from Oxford University. That people with more friends have higher pain tolerance. Yeah. This was done at the University Department of Experimental Psychology. They were studying whether differences in the neurobiology may help explain why some of us with larger social networks than others have less pain. This is what was said, quote, "I was particularly interested in a chemical in the brain called endorphins. Endorphins are part of our pain and pleasure circuitry. They're our body's natural painkillers and also give us feelings of pleasure." Now, that was from the lead researcher. Now, previous studies have suggested endorphins promote social bonding in both humans and animals. And one theory, known as the brain opiate theory of social attachment, is that social interactions trigger positive emotions when endorphins bind to opiate receptors in the brain. And this gives us that feel-good fact and that we get from seeing our friends. So to test the theory, they relied upon the fact that endorphins are powerful painkillers and stronger even than morphine. So the researchers therefore used pain tolerance as a way to assess the brain's endorphin activity. And it worked. Quote, "These results are also interesting because recent research suggests that the endorphin system may be disrupted in psychological disorders such as depression. This may be part of the reason why depressed people often suffer from a lack of pleasure and become socially withdrawn." And I would add something to that, and this is from our own research and tens of thousands of people I've counseled. Exercise increases endorphins. In fact, it only takes a half hour of exercise, aerobic exercise, in the morning to create about 6 hours of the endorphin surge, which gives you a sense of well-being. It allows you to feel more content. It helps get you out of depression. And then if you did it twice a day, if you exercised a half hour in the morning and a half hour in the early evening, you would then be creating almost a half a day of feel-good endorphins. So even for people who may not have friends or large friendships that they can engage in that helps with endorphins, it would be a big plus, especially if you have depression. I always insist that depressed people and anxious people must get out and exercise. And you see tremendous benefit from doing that, not just psychologically, but physically. Also, from the latest study, 4 in 10 American women are now obese. Not just overweight, that figure is much higher. Now, here's the problem. When you're obese, you have a much higher rate of dying from all causes, heart disease, cancers, depression, diabetes, and other conditions, including vascular. You have a less quality of life, and you're going to definitely shorten your telomeres, which are the end caps of your chromosomes. Just visualize your shoestring, the end of your shoestring, that little plastic cap that keeps from unraveling, that's your telomeres. If your telomeres stay long, you live a longer life. If they get shorter, you live a shorter life. Whatever the cell, the body is, if you're overusing it, or if in some way it's being depleted of your telomeres, that organ or system dies first. Therefore, you don't die one age. There's no one biological clock. There are biological clocks in our brain, our lungs, our heart, our eyes. So therefore, a person could say, well, their body was healthy, but their brain went, like with Alzheimer's. They were still physically fit. Yeah, that's because the brain had so many amyloid plaques in it, so much toxic reactions from inflammatory agents that it prematurely aged. Therefore, what I'm going to do is, starting this week, I'm going to set aside one half of a program each week to talk about what we can do to help all men and women no longer become obese or even overweight. Therefore, lengthening your telomeres, lengthening your life, reducing your risk of disease. So the good news is we're starting on this week. Also, 100% fruit juice, according to this latest study, was able to reduce your risk of obesity and metabolic syndrome. And this was the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, and it was done at the University of Minnesota. Now, what this means in lay language is, if you were to drink a glass of orange juice, 100% orange juice, or grapefruit juice, or grape juice, or apple juice, you're really helping your body. The phytonutrients, the antioxidants, are helping protect your cells from DNA damage. Versus what we do in America, the majority of people don't have fresh fruit juices. We have fruit drinks, which are high in fructose, high in artificial chemicals, high also with colas in phosphoric acid, and artificial caramel coloring, which is a suspected carcinogen, or artificial sweeteners, and that's bad. That actually contributes to cancer, heart disease, metabolic syndrome. So if you could help yourself or others make a shift over from fruit drinks, which are unhealthy, to 100% fruit juice, that's much better. And finally, tea and grape compounds show mitochondria, that's your energy factories in your cells, benefits for overweight and obese people. This is from the Maastricht University Medical Center in the Netherlands. Quote, "Any type of food or supplement containing the epigallantoin 3-gallate, that's a that's that would be like grapes with resveratrol, or it would be green tea, let's say turmeric. Those are all good for your energy factories and your cells. And this was a study for 12 weeks. It was a small amount. It was only 282 milligrams per day, and with 80 milligrams of resveratrol, and had enormous benefit for helping with metabolic syndrome. It improved skeletal muscle oxidation, and it lowered triglycerides, and this was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So in lay language, when you're eating your fruits, especially berries, pomegranate, cherries, tart cherries, and grapes, and you're having green tea, or you're having an herb like turmeric, which is commonly used in your curry dishes, you are lessening your likelihood of diabetes, metabolic syndrome, you're helping your cells, you're protecting your cells, and that's all good. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a brief break and come back with my guest, Chris Hedges. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world who are listening right now. My guest is Chris Hedges. Chris is one of our nation's most insightful cultural critics and social political activist and investigative journalist. Worked for over 20 years as a foreign correspondent in war zones and conflict areas, Central America, Middle East, Africa, the Balkans. He reported for the New York Times, the Christian Science Monitor, won the the Pulitzer Prize back in 2002. For his reporting on global terrorism, and also that same year he won Amnesty International's Global Award for Human Rights Journalism. He's the author of many best-selling books, including Wages of Rebellion, The Moral Imperative of Revolt, which is a philosophical and historical and timely clarion call for a new revolution against a repressive political and corporate hegemony. Nice to have you with us today, Chris.
Thank you, Gary.
Chris, many of us are concerned that in the very near future, next couple weeks, when the Democratic Convention happens, Bernie Sanders will get up and say something to the effect of, we fought the good fight, we started a revolution, we got people's attention on important social issues, but now we have to be realistic. Anything's better than Donald Trump. We need to pull together and get on the platform of the Democratic Party our goals. And once it's on that platform, then that's going to be something we're all going to work towards. So let's all go over and support Hillary Clinton, which he will do. That's the fear. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that that is what he's going to do. And at that moment, he becomes an impediment to progress. I and others, Shama Sawa and many others, have long opposed, before he announced his decision to run within the Democratic Party establishment, not only for the anti-democratic procedures that I think denied him legitimately the nomination, certainly if independents had been allowed to vote in all of the primaries, if Hillary Clinton had not had the dark money or super PAC money, the party apparatus behind her, the super delegates, the ability to steal caucuses like Nevada. I think not only would Sanders have won, but I think he would have quite decisively been able to beat Donald Trump. And it seems from everything Bernie has said that I don't see any reason to think otherwise, that he will do precisely what you said. And we have to stop getting caught up in these particular election cycles or this mantra of the least worst, because that mantra only produces or makes things worse. So Shama Sawant, the socialist city councilwoman in Seattle, has mounted a petition calling on Bernie to run as an independent. I don't think either she or I thinks he will, but if he doesn't, then his supporters have to begin to build third party apparatus and a movement to support it without him. That's our goal, and that means that we are going to be in the political wilderness for perhaps as long as a decade. Syriza, when it was founded, was polling at about 4% and eventually took over 60% of the vote to take control of Greece. So that's where we're going to have to put our energy. These things are not done overnight. We have huge forces and corporate forces, you know, thrown up, as we saw with the Sanders campaign, by the two parties to block the ability of citizens to build a genuine movement, whether that's challenging voter lists, where they did with Nader to run up legal fees, you know, putting all sorts of absurd conditions in order to get on the ballot, locking you out of the debates. I mean, they'll play as dirty as they played during the primaries, but that's our only hope left, especially when we look at the rapid unraveling of the ecosystem last, 13 months, or the hottest months ever in human history. I mean, we don't have any time to fool around anymore.
What are your greatest concerns for a Hillary Clinton presidency, or actually a Bill and Hillary Clinton presidency?
Well, the Clintons created the phenomena that Trump has capitalized on. Trump didn't create that phenomena. And we may be able to get rid of Trump, but something more vile will be coughed up to replace him, unless we roll back the assault of neoliberalism, the cannibalization of the country because of these imperial wars, 15 years of war, longest war in American history. What did we get for it? Nothing except, you know, vast suffering, human suffering, and a squandering of trillions and trillions of dollars of resources we do not have, frankly, the luxury of expending. It's this surrender of the Democratic Party that engendered the rage and the insurgencies of both Sanders and Trump. And that was really begun by Clinton, starting with NAFTA, deregulation of the FCC, destruction of the welfare system, explosion of our system of mass incarceration, you know, including putting people in prison for life for nonviolent drug offenses, ripping down Glass-Steagall, which precipitated the national and global financial crisis and the recession. It may be too weak a word that we continue to live in. All of that came under the Clintons, and that's how you got a figure like Trump, because they sold out working men and women for corporate money, and they got it. And, you know, Trump is obviously a, you know, frightening and repugnant figure in many ways, but, you know, he in many ways is just a cruder version of the Clintons, in the sense that he's a con artist. He tells people what they want to hear. He very crudely engages in racism. The Clintons are much more subtle. They built their power base within the Democratic Party by overturning the platform issues and diversity that had opened up the party when Jesse Jackson ran the Rainbow Coalition. They engaged in all sorts of coded racism. Remember, Clinton goes back to Arkansas to execute this mentally disabled prisoner. They, along with Biden, decided to steal the law and order issue from the Republicans. In terms of personal corruption, in terms of wealth, just look at the Clinton Foundation, where the most repressive dictatorships, including Saudi Arabia, are funneling money in exchange for political favors. It's completely open, along with these insane speaking fees that she gets from Goldman Sachs. So, they're different style. In terms of actually adjusting this assault, this reconfiguration of American society into a form of neo-feudalism, neither Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton are going to do anything to alter that.
Right now, there is a lot of Islamophobia in this world, and both candidates are harping on it. And there are several people on television who seem to be making the rounds, and you see them everywhere. And also the one by, I'm going to have you address, Bill Maher, that went to the liberal side of this. And I'd like for you to hear what he has to say, then I'd like for you to respond to it, please. Just listen to Bill Maher.
They want to, for pointing out that Islam is not like other religions. There are illiberal beliefs that are held by vast numbers of Muslim people that I don't think...
Vast number of Christians, too.
No, that's not true. Not true. Vast numbers of Christians do not believe that if you leave the Christian religion, you should be killed for it. Vast numbers of Christians do not treat women as second-class citizens. Vast numbers of Christians...
No, I agree with that.
...do not believe that if you draw a picture of Jesus Christ, you should get killed for it. There's a Pew poll of Egypt done a few years ago. 82%, I think it was, said stoning is the appropriate punishment for adultery. Over 80% thought death was the appropriate punishment for leaving the Muslim religion. I'm sure you know these things.
I know. I do. But the claim that this religion is
like other religions is just naive and plain wrong. It is not like other religions. The New York Times pointed out in an op-ed a couple of weeks ago that in Saudi Arabia, just since August 4th, I think it was, they have beheaded 19 people. Most for non-violent crimes, right, including homosexuality.
They haven't got the hands off the thief.
Right. Okay. So we're upset that ISIS is beheading people, which we should be upset about. But Saudi Arabia does it, and they're our good friends, because they have oil.
Right.
Okay? But they do it too. This is the center of the religion. In Mecca, where infidels, right, non-Muslims, are not even allowed in the holy parts of the city. I mean, okay, they do behead people. Now, if they were beheading people in Vatican City, which is the equivalent of Mecca, don't you think there'd be a bigger outcry about it? So this is the soft bigotry of low expectations
that we have with Muslim people.
Yeah. When they do crazy things and believe crazy things, somehow it's just not talked about nearly as much. But as Ayaan Hirsi Ali points out, she says, can we really say that women are treated equally in the Muslim world? I mean, their testimony in court is very often counted as half. They need permission to leave the house in some places. But in this country, if you just use the wrong word about women, they go nuts. And all these other countries, they should. They're doing things like making them wear burqas, and I hear liberals say things like, well, they want to. They want to. They've been brainwashed. You know, they don't want... It's like saying a streetwalker wants to do that.
That was with Charlie Rose. Could you respond to that?
Well, let me preface that by saying that I spent 7 years in the Middle East, and I speak Arabic. That characterization of the Muslim world is racist and untrue. One-fifth of the world's population are Muslim. Most of them are not Arab. The radical, violent Islamic forces that we see gathered around groups like ISIS are not even 1% of the Muslim world. I lived in Egypt for 4 years. The idea that Egyptians, who are some of the most pacific people as a culture I've ever been in, would endorse that kind of violence. I don't care what polls say. I watched all sorts of polling out of the Arab world. You don't know who's at your door pulling out of Gaza. Are you going to really say anything that's going to anger Hamas? You may be living in a neighborhood where there are Islamic Brotherhood mosques and charities. So, I mean, the whole, this idea that we're going to understand a culture because of a Pew or a Gallup poll is ridiculous. He doesn't grasp that there are a variety of social, economic, and political factors that go into creating radicalism, including ISIS and Al-Qaeda, that have nothing to do with religion. Believers of a particular faith, whether it's Christian or Jewish, they have far more in common with their fellow co-nationalists than they do with religious leaders. You know, the idea, for instance, that Bolivian Catholics, because they're Catholic, you know, have so much in common or have a lot in common with French Catholics. Well, no. I mean, French Catholics, Muslims, Jews who are raised in France and speak French are going to have a commonality of belief systems and ways of looking at the world because of the national environment that they live in, that particular cultural environment. So all of this is just frighteningly ignorant, frighteningly racist. He doesn't have any experience in the Arab world. It would be as if I was going on about China. I've never been to China. I don't speak Chinese. This is just a celebration of American ignorance, American chauvinism, and American racism.
Thank you. I appreciate you sharing that with us, Chris. I know you have to run, so I promise we'll get you out early, so thank you very much for coming on and giving us some of your insights.
Thank you, Gary.
And his television program called Days of Revolt is aired every Monday at 11 p.m. Eastern on Telesure TV. That's T-E-L-E-S-U-R, and his book is Wages of Rebellion. Now, I'm going to take a brief break. Now, I'm going to share some insights in a moment about the climate that I think are very important. Also, 9 diseases linked with pesticides, which is one of the reasons I'm encouraging people to throw out all your pesticides, properly throw them out so that they're disposed of in a way that doesn't pollute our environment. You shouldn't have any toxic pesticides in your environment at all. I'll be sharing natural ways that you can kill pests, including the best. Let me tell you right now the best way of getting rid of pests. I'm talking about ticks and different spiders and different insects. You take some diatomaceous earth, very inexpensive. You can get it in any pool supply store. And you get a big box. You put it in a spreader. And then on a dry day, you just walk up and down and up and down until there's a light coating of diatomaceous earth on the ground. And as long as it can go about 24 hours without any water on it, that will kill off a lot of insects. In fact, you do that about once a week, and you shouldn't have any problems. I haven't seen a tick. I haven't seen any problems. I've got a big lawn because that's what I use. And then around flower beds, you spray cayenne diluted 100-to-1 with garlic and a ginger and onion and an apple cider vinegar. That will you can spray it on flowers. And you can spray it on buds and sprouts and seedlings, and it destroys almost all insects that otherwise get on your plant and eat them. I've had zero loss of plants because of insects. Simple sprays. Now, here's what we have to know. These are the diseases linked by the scientific literature to pesticides. Cancer. Pesticides have been identified as causing bladder, brain, and bone cancers, and also leukemia and liver cancers, prostate and pancreatic cancers. And there are 60 different studies in the peer-reviewed literature on how your lymph system cancers alone are manifest with pesticides. Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's also a form of dementia, and it's a progressive disease, and part of the thing we do is we around sprays. And these sprays go into the body, and they end up going through the brain, blood-brain barrier, and then they cause toxic reactions in our brain. Psychomotor problems, behavioral problems, so that's another. Diabetes is also on the list. Parkinson's, endocrine disruption, and endocrine disruption is big. If you're eating a lot of regular produce that is not organic, you're getting chemicals on that produce that can disrupt your natural endocrines. And that can cause adrenal and pituitary and thyroid imbalances, causing gross fatigue, causing weight gain, causing reproductive and behavioral problems, and causing cancers. Also birth defects, asthma, learning and developmental disorders from reproductive and sexual dysfunction. All of those are known to, and some may, we don't know the exact percentage, but certainly they contribute to cancer. So go organic, use natural treatments, no longer use Roundup or any of the pesticides. Also, from our environmental section today, high levels of chemicals found in people living near gas wells. This is a new report from the Smog blog, Sharon Kelly. Quote, chemicals from gas wells were discovered in biological samples drawn from residents of Pavilion, Wyoming, at levels as much as 100% above the national averages, according to the report. The study is the first to sample both the air near drilling sites and the levels of chemicals in people living and working near these wells, allowing researchers to study the ways that toxic air pollutants are entering people's bodies near gas wells and putting their health at risk. The researchers found evidence of 16 potentially dangerous chemicals in the individuals, and these are very serious cancer-causing chemicals. So the bottom line is, when people were saying for years, well, we begin to find ourselves suffering from dizziness and nosebleeds and ulcers in the intestines, they were telling the truth. We should ban all gas hydrofracking. And to tell you how bad glyphosate is, this is from the Organic Consumer Association. Quote, glyphosate, the most used herbicide in the world, has been found in the urine of 93% of the American public during a unique testing period. So, and it's been labeled as a probable human carcinogen by the World Health Organization. So, go organic and get that out of there. Now, I want to complete today's program by looking at the environment. I'm going to be sharing some of my own insights as well as Dar Jamel of Truth Out. As an environmentalist, someone who is now writing and has been for 7 years, a new book plus doing a new documentary on the environment, I'm concerned that people are not pulling back far enough to see the larger picture. Most people only are attentive to that which is in their immediate environment each day. And that's why at the beginning of the show I said that if you were in New York City yesterday, in Manhattan, or any of the boroughs, or any of the suburbs, you'd have a beautiful, wonderful day. And you wouldn't appreciate how bad it was yesterday. For example, in Arizona, or in Nevada, or all over the state of California, they had record-breaking days. Or in one place, there was one place last week, and then 2 weeks before that, where it got up to 167 degrees. That is so hot outside that a person could die very easily within a half hour of that exposure. And then the flooding. But if our town is not being flooded, if we're not hit with a hurricane, we tend not to pay attention to it. Let us please pull back and pay attention, because right now we are at a 409.3 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And that is unsustainable. If you have that range of atmospheric carbon dioxide content hitting the planet, that's the highest it's been in the last 15 million years, and it's going to continue to increase. Look at the work of Dr. James Hansen, former NASA scientist and longtime whistleblower, about the impending dangers of what is called ACD. ACD is anthropogenic climate disruption, and we are going to hear a lot more about it. There are thousands of scientific papers published on the topic, but they tend to be more conservative. But what we're seeing is that Antarctica is melting at a much more rapid rate than what anyone anticipated, and also that it's very vulnerable to disintegration of the massive Antarctic ice sheets. And we thought that they would never melt. Well, they're melting very fast, and it's also true in Greenland. Greenland now has thousands and thousands of these little lakes. A lake might be a puddle, maybe 6 feet deep and 100 feet across, and then you have some that are acres. But all this water is melting from the top and then going to the bottom, causing the whole thing to skid forward at that gravitational pull into the ocean. And then you have enormous calving, huge calves coming off, chunks of ice that are the size of Manhattan, that's adding. The Himalayas are melting. The Canadian glaciers are melting. The American glaciers are melting. The Russian glaciers are melting. So all over the world, our glaciers are melting. In some places, in Peru, in the Andes, they're 80% gone. Now, that's a problem because thousands upon tens of thousands of people in those areas rely upon that meltwater for their drinking water, for their irrigation, for their fields. And now they're looking at the potential of now, right now as I speak, of not having enough water to drink. Now, I'm not even referring to all the places that don't have water throughout Africa and Asia. Vietnam now has a major, major drought. But we always thought of Vietnam as being very lush and tropical. It was, not now. And so therefore we have 100-year-old records being broken all over the world. It's getting very hot. And this is by all the major indices. The Japan Meteorological Agency released data showing that they had the hottest 2 months in their history. NASA data confirms this increase. And also showed that March, for example, increased 1.65 degrees Celsius, higher than the 1951 to 80 average. So what does this mean? It means that as the planet heats up, several things happen. First, you can't have animals. We shouldn't have animals in any case, but for those who've had generation upon generation of animals, drive through where I've driven, drive through Texas, West Texas, Middle Texas, drive up through then Oklahoma, over through Colorado, drive through Wyoming, Montana, you'll see thousands of animals skinned because there was no water without water, there wasn't grass without grass, there was no protein, no nitrogen, and they starved to death. And you'll see signs for sale, all these properties, because without the wells, and without the water from the wells, then there's no value in the property. It's too much for them to keep the animals. So the animals are dying, farms are being sold, and they're, because there's no water, they're not looking at what they could do with a small amount of water, hydroponics. Hydroponics are the future. Mark my words. Hydroponics will be the future in 5 years of most of our agriculture. Mono agriculture is done. It's dying. It's a dinosaur that is 80 feet long and 40 feet high and weighs 20 tons, but is chewing its last food. It is over. And living in those places where you have to have good quality weather, good amounts of soil moisture. Look at all over Africa. Look at all over South America, including in the Amazon basin where they've deforested and now you can't grow anything because the seeds can't get germinated. And if they're germinated, they get stunted. And if the soil is too hot, then it increases insects. So that's happening. So the earth is heating at such an enormous rate. Do you know how long it takes the average polar bear now in the water to swim? 5 days without stopping. 5 days a polar bear has to swim to find ice because on land they're losing weight and dying of malnutrition. Their diet is seals. And seals come when there's ice and they come up through the blowholes and then the seal or some of the other smaller whales the polar bear kills. Can't do it. So they're dying, they're drowning. They're dying of malnutrition. And also even moose are returning to the northern Alaska tundra for the first time since 1880. The moose hadn't been in the region since then due to overhunting, but now they're returning because it's warmed up and now that tundra is providing grasses for them so they eat and the shrubs are taller. And the Philippines are having a hard problem with food. Why? Because the storms are so bad that it's wiping out the seed and then it's drenching it and it's rotting. You can't have seed that has too much water. It rots, just like a plant that's overwatered rots. So you got too much water where you don't need it, and it's flooding. And then you've got too little water where you need it, and it's causing drought. You've got the extremes on both ends, and you don't have enough melt of snow. There are places where you used to have 6 to 8 feet of snow packed on a mountain, and it would release its snow over a period of 6 months. Now it's not doing it. So there's not enough water being released for people, and that's true all over the world. And then you've got fires. Today, what was a 1,700-acre fire is now about 12,000 acres. But the big fires you haven't heard a word about. You haven't heard a word about record fires in other parts of the world. We only hear about them maybe in Florida, in Texas, in California. In point of fact, Kansas had its worst fire ever, 400,000 acres, and that was considered extreme until you realize that Nepal had a wildfire out of control. It burned 3.2 million acres in 15 days. Well, think about all the species of animals and plants that were necessary for that. And then you've got your air. And in 135 years of record keeping to date, the United States is officially already experiencing its third warmest year to date. Our air is more polluted. Our air is more toxic. And we're getting hotter air, which makes it even worse of all. So what I'm suggesting is this. Isn't it time that we all, every single citizen, took a look at our environment and ask ourselves, what am I doing to contribute to the problem? What can I do to contribute to a solution? Am I moving to a place that has too few resources to be sustainable? If so, why am I moving there? Why am I moving to San Francisco or to Los Angeles or San Bernardino? I shouldn't. Why am I moving to Las Vegas? Shouldn't. Or New Mexico? Shouldn't. Or Colorado? Shouldn't. Or Kansas? Shouldn't. Or most of Texas? Shouldn't. But we do. Are we really concerned about what happens until the day that we're watching Katrina and we're in our attics asking for help? At what point do we move away from the shores so we don't get hit by another Sandy catastrophe, which is inevitable? I believe it's time for us to do a little introspection and begin the process of becoming conscious about a relationship with our environment. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.
Anywhere inside.